it's often assumed by people that they are kind of stuck for life after they get into the middle years and begin having their families, that whatever job they have or marriage or situation, that this is kind of the way it's going to be. And a lot of people are kind of living out other people's dreams. Maybe a parent has wanted you to be a teacher or a pastor, and you bought that dream. It really wasn't yours, but they said to you, you ought to get a teaching certificate. So you went through school and got one. And many of us, after becoming Christians, began to feel a deep restlessness in the vocational place where I certainly did. I became in the oil business because my father was in the oil business, and I wanted to please him. I spent something like 15 years in the oil business, and I didn't realize I was living out his dream. And it gave me ulcers, all kinds. I did pretty well in it because I'm very competitive, and I wanted his approval. But as I began to realize that it is possible that I could be something else, it was a great new thought, because I couldn't imagine myself ripping my family up by the roots and doing something different. Now, I think what Christ is saying to us is that we can have the freedom to dream. And these 10 things we've asked you to look at, you've looked at kind of what your fantasy of what you might be can be. Now, I would like for us to do something now to see which ones of these things may really be closest to our hearts. Now, I realize in saying this that outward circumstances may keep anyone from moving or from changing. But I think because of our fear of change, we often repress our true hopes and dreams. This has been my case, and now I'm doing a whole different thing than I was in the oil business, and I love it. So I just wanted us to dream together. So I want you to imagine yourself in this situation. You've just been to the doctor for an annual physical checkup. It's a very fine clinic that you've been through, and the doctor tells you at the last that you have a very rare disease, and you have only 6 months to live. Now, the thing about this disease that's strange is that you'll have all of your faculties, you'll be able to do anything you can now do, right up to the day of your death, but 6 months is your time. You walk out of that office, and you go by your attorney's office to see if your estate's in shape. You realize that you have plenty of money to take care of your family with your insurance, and then he tells you, of all things, that you've just inherited $250,000 tax-free, and that you can do anything you want to with it because your family will be all right. So now this is your situation. You have 6 months to live. You've got all the money you need, up to $250,000, that will not be taken from anyone else. And what are you going to do with the last 6 months of your life? And if your first answer is travel, let's assume you've already done all the traveling you want. Now, what would you do vocationally? What would you do with your time? All right, now reflect for about 5 minutes and make notes in the space provided under C about what you would do, and then report to your group what you would do with the last 6 months of your life. Of course, we realize that many people can't move, or it's not the right thing. And maybe our dreams are, after we have checked them out, and I think one should check out his dreams and see if they're feasible. But if we find out they're not, or not at this time, then the question becomes, how do we live right where we are for Jesus Christ and for other people? And my own experience has been and was that for years after I became a Christian, that to begin to live in the present moment in my own job. And I remember the first day I went and sat in my office, and I looked around and said, hey, God, I can't move. I can't go back to school. I can't do this. How can I live here? And I began to listen to the people around me. And I began to pray for them as I walked down to the drinking fountain. And life began to have meaning, and I realized that the way I did my work could be relational. And that suddenly the thing I was finding in a group like this was the thing that made my work have meaning not only to me, but it suddenly seemed to have meaning for God, because I was representing him in some way, just listening and touching people and hearing about their lives and sharing mine. This is, I think, one of the greatest discoveries for me, that wherever I am, it doesn't seem to matter as much anymore, because if God's there and if I'm learning and growing, then the question of meaning has been ultimately solved. Even the tragedy begins to have meaning. The failures, as we've talked about, the lack of faith, the failures in our business, the successes, all of these are things we can offer to God and to each other and begin to live a whole new style of life, relating ourselves to God and other people.
Yeah, I live in a city right now as we're doing this together that was built by a man who was in a small group. And he happened to be a builder and a mortgage banker. And as he was doing the very thing you're having us do here, Keith, to dream about the thing he'd most like to do, he said, I don't like suburbia. I don't like the inner city. I want to build an alternative way for Americans to live. And so Columbia, Maryland came out of a small group where a man took his very expertise. He didn't change fields, but now he began to build, and it's an exciting story. But I believe that this whole vision that God gives us in the Old Testament, that there come a time when your young men shall dream dreams and old men see visions, we're to become dreamers with God about new ways to live together, to relate, to build a society. And I believe that the best way to be a teacher has not yet been discovered. The best way to be a physician hasn't been discovered. The best way to do business hasn't been discovered. And so it's in this thing, as we begin to call forth each other's dreams and begin to do these things, we'll begin to not only find the adventure for ourselves, but begin to be architects and shapers of a whole new society, which is really what the book of Revelation is all about, a new heaven and a new earth. And we become partners and architects with God for building a new society.
Hey, you know, how would one actually begin? It seems to me when we want to do something, we design a big program and get hundreds of people together and we want to build a bridge. How are we going to build a bridge across this great body of water? Well, it seems to me the biblical way is when God wants a bridge built, a baby's born. And the baby grows up and becomes an engineer and builds the bridge. You see, and the mother was faithful to this little vision she had and helped that baby to become the engineer who could do it. Because when the bridge was needed, none of the existing engineers had the training. They weren't into the problem. So how would we begin to live this little life that seems insignificant, but which is like splitting the atom? The power is in the little things, it seems to me. They're finding it out in physics, that when one gets the world down to its smallest level, the greatest power can be released. When God spoke in one life through Jesus Christ, more happened than when he spoke through thousands of philosophers.
And Keith, I think the thing that kills this dream that each of us has about his own life and his piece of society is all the people saying it can't be done, or it's terrible, or it's dumb, or who are you to think of that? And I'd like to suggest a thing I heard from a friend of mine who's a pastor of a church. And they have a rule on their official board that if anybody presents a new idea, the rule is you've got to say three good things about it before you say a bad thing.
You mean the person presenting it?
Or the person presenting it says, here's my dream, and before anybody else can tear it down, they must say three good things about it. Now, in that kind of a climate around the dinner table for a family or official board in a church or a small group like we have here, I think there people will be encouraged to dream. Because people say, yeah, I hear that. And three reasons why I think it's a good dream, and then the last fourth might be, but it's not going to work.
Yeah, and that's right.
But the climate for dreams to grow in is important.
Right. Okay, well, now let's turn into our lives outside this group. And let's take a few minutes, take 5 minutes, and think of three people in your lives, so we can get specific with this. Three people, and some way you'd like to change your behavior toward those three people, maybe in your vocational, maybe it's your boss or one of your employees, maybe it is your wife or one of your children, maybe it's a mother or father, maybe it's a minister, or maybe it's someone at the church, someone you're in close contact with, and put their initial, so you'll remember, on this page under D in these three places, and then put the behavior you'd like to change. And what we'd like for you to do, if you want to, is to... This page will tear out. You tear out this page, and you put it in the envelope that your leader will have, and with your address, you address it, and a stamp will be on it, and 6 months later, your leader will mail this to you, and this will be a way of seeing if you change that behavior, a way of beginning to become accountable, a way of beginning to say, hey, I really mean it, and I'm putting a tag on it so that in 6 months, I'll have to say to God, forgive me, I didn't do it, or thank you for helping me do it. It seems to me that the secret of being on the edge of adventure and stepping out into life is you don't take a quantum leap. You take one step to get on the journey. And so beginning to take these small steps might be a lifetime. It may be an eternal process. And I'm just grateful to have been a part of this process with you in taking the first steps on the adventure of faith.
At this point, we've come to the end of our 13 sessions together. And if there's one thing I believe with all my heart, it's that endings are always beginnings. And as we discover what it means to be a child of God and then the people of God together in mission, it's that we're always moving. The authentic stance of faith is that we move out. Abraham moved out when he heard God, and Moses led people across the wilderness for years, and Jesus traveled with his 12, and Paul was moving in his missionary journeys. So somehow the walk of faith is never staying put. So we come to the end of something now, and that means the beginning of something else. I think we need now to begin to hear what each of us sees as his own particular shape of obedience. What does the journey ahead in faith look like for each of us? Keith, how does it look for you?
Well, it's a very exciting time in my life, Bruce. I find that there are so many things I want to do. I have projects lined up, and I'm right now in the process of deciding what things I should do, because I'm not working for anyone in the sense of a regular job, so I must make these decisions. This is where I am, kind of sitting here, what am I going to do now that we've finished this series? What's next? That's where I am, trying to decide what the next step is for me in terms of what I'll do.
Now, for me, I have a dream about a new kind of center that might enable people to grow. We call it a modular learning center, but I'm about to be unemployed in 6 months. And I have a research grant that's about to run out, and what I do with this dream, whether it ever gets built or how or by whom, I don't know. So I'm facing both a tremendous opportunity plus unemployment, and it's kind of scary and kind of interesting.
Hey, let's do something. Why don't you, in this group, right now, stop and kind of think about what the future looks like for you. What do you think God's dream is in your life, either vocationally or personally? Maybe it means a new job you'd hope for or think he wants you to have, and it's come to light.
Maybe doing the old job in a new way.
Right. But what is it for you? And just go around your group now and then turn the tape back on.
Now, Keith, one of the things that I need, and I'm discovering anew in this session together, is that if I'm going to face the future without too much fear or too much anxiety and faith, I need people to help me. And I need some gifts as well as traveling companions for the journey. And I think we all do. And I'd like to give you, as your brother, a gift for your adventure ahead. And the gift I'd like to give you is the gift that you might know what the priorities are for this multiplicity of things that you're faced with right now. I'm sure a number of books to write and projects to begin, and too many things could just confuse the whole thing. So I'd like to give you the gift of quietness where you can do the first one first and the second one next and not feel confusion or pressure.
Hey, thank you. I'd like to give you the gift, Bruce, as you're facing unemployment, as I recall for the first time since you started working as a kid in the Depression.
Right.
I'd like to give you the gift of knowing that God's there and real in your life and has given you the kinds of abilities that will allow you to make the living you need, to give you the freedom from a deep concern and worry, which when this thing ends and you are unemployed, to know that in this next step you have the things that you need to provide for your family.
Hey, thank you. And I claim that, and I accept that gift from God through you. And now, if each of you would do that to the other people in your group, one by one, go around the group and give each person there a gift that will be hopefully helpful and from God for their particular journey. And then when you have finished giving each other a gift around the group, move into your final time of prayer together. And here you can simply thank God for one another and claim for them the exciting future that He has for each, or do whatever it is that God tells you to do.